And we welcome you into the Father's Day edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Chaputo, C70 at the Bat, at C70. And with me is Tara Wellman from Birdseeds and Tara Wellman on Twitter. We hope all the fathers have had a good Father's Day. We have plenty of things to talk about in relation to the Cardinals, both on the field and off the field. Very few of them positive, but, you know, it's a fair warning to this. It's not necessarily going to be an upbeat show, but we'll see what we can do. Cardinals are winning right at the moment, 3-0 in the eighth with Jordan Hicks on the mound, and you got to figure Bud Norris coming up, so knock on all sorts of wood, but you kind of feel like maybe the Cardinals are going to avoid the sweep from the Cubs, so that's a positive thing. We'll give that out there, but I know that Tara wants to start off with some social media aspects of the Cardinals, the Cardinal fan base. And so, Tara, I have not followed it as much this weekend. I've kind of gotten a gist of what's going on, but why don't you set the stage and then tell everybody why they're terrible.
Okay, deal. No, so evidently in the last 24 hours or so, things got so ugly on Twitter for both Dexter and Aaliyah Fowler that they decided their best plan of action was to basically delete all of their tweets. They didn't deactivate their accounts, but they've essentially pulled themselves off of Twitter. I'm not gonna lie. First of all, I've cooled down a little bit since this. My blood's not quite boiling at this point, but I was as upset about this situation. In fact, probably more bothered by this than anything that the Cardinals have actually done on the field today. And, you know, I know there'll be people out there who, will disagree and who will think that, you know, baseball is life and it should be given the top priority. I think that's silly. I think that anytime you have such a narrowed perspective about life that comments on the internet to and about specific players and their character or their, you know, their livelihood or their value to society, when you think that that's okay because of how they play on the baseball field, y'all should probably maybe take a break from the internet for a while, because you need to look beyond, some of those things. But I think it's also, look, it's a reflection of society right now, and people are reactionary, and Twitter gives them an outlet to be reactionary in public. And not only to do it publicly, but to do it directly towards the people you're reacting to. The Cardinals as a team, as a baseball team, are incredibly frustrating right now, and we'll talk more about that. But that has been channeled into this unbelievable amount of negativity towards specific players and now toward their family. Look, I don't care if you think that Aaliyah should or should not defend her husband publicly or that she should or should not call out people on Twitter who say nasty things. That's your prerogative to like that about her or to not like that about her. But just like all of us have the right to say whatever is on our minds on Twitter, so does she. And if your family's under attack on a daily basis, if you look at her mentions and Dexter Fowler's mentions on Twitter, I would have lashed out a long time ago. Now, yes, they're in a public position. They sort of take that on. And when you choose to engage with the public, when you're in that position, you have to expect that they're going to engage with you positively or negatively. But for it to get so bad that both of them, as two of the most engaging and the most interesting and the most bright and I don't even, there aren't words to effectively describe just how good I think they are for the St. Louis community and the way that they desire to be involved with the fan base. for those two people, two of the brightest lights on the internet as far as Cardinals baseball is concerned, to have been given so much grief that they decided their best plan of action was just to disengage is unbelievable to me. And I know before people start freaking out, yes, other fan bases have the same thing, right? Jason Hayward left Twitter because Cubs fans did the same thing. I was repulsed by it then too. Just because other people do it doesn't make it less bad. And it's quite frankly embarrassing to be associated with that kind of visceral towards players because of how they play on the baseball field.
Yeah, and Tara has cooled down. You should have seen the messages I was getting while I was at church this morning. But it's completely true. And I say that, you know, obviously my other fandom is Star Wars, and they're going through exactly the same thing right now with, a very divisive part of the fan base who did not care for the Last Jedi movie. And more than just the movie, I think at some points of the fact that women were in major roles or whatever, they ran one of the actresses off of Instagram because of all the negativity that they were throwing her way, which, again, she's an actress. She had pretty much absolutely nothing to do with the movie. She didn't write it. She didn't put the ideas out there. They gave her lines. She said them. And I thought she did a fine job. It was an interesting, you know, even if you don't like the character, even if you don't like the movie, even if you don't like the baseball player or what he's doing, why the heck are you adding them at it? I mean, it's bad enough to talk about them in a way where you're questioning effort or you're thinking that they don't care, but you're not actually, you know, tagging them in the tweet. But to go through that and to, you know, basically, you know, try to tough guy it and say, I'm saying this to Dexter Fowler's face, which, I mean, you really wouldn't if you were actually standing in front of Dexter Fowler, I don't think, or possibly wouldn't be standing in front of Dexter Fowler very long. But, you know, I just, you know, basic human decency is, you know, be polite, as Bill and Ted said, be excellent to one another. You know, and that's not it. It's very disappointing to see that going on.
And I would say this, and I want to say this with all the grace and compassion in the world, because I get it. People react on Twitter and I'll say things and go back and be like, oh, I maybe shouldn't have said that on Twitter, because we all do it, right? It's a stream of consciousness source of communication, which is a very dangerous thing. But I would say this, yes, people who are tagging these individuals in their comments, I can't imagine doing that. However, I would also say that we, all of us who are not tagging those athletes, should be very aware of our part in enabling those people to have the kind of ammo that they do and the bravery that they do by engaging in those conversations without tagging the athlete. If I have that conversation about Dexter Fowler publicly on Twitter and I say the same things without tagging him in the comment, it doesn't make my comment any more justifiable.
Right.
And that's where I would say, just as a warning for us to all maybe be a little bit more aware of how we talk about people in public, that just because it's Twitter and not real life in, you know, the mall or at the game or in person, doesn't mean that we should take any less seriously our role in enabling some of that negativity.
Yeah, I mean, and we should also be clear. I think it's absolutely fair to talk about what has happened on the field. You can say Dexter Fowler is not having a good season. You can say you don't want to see Dexter Fowler out there against left-handed pitching. You can say things like that. But when you start getting into, you know, questioning their work ethic, questioning their drive, and, you know, and that's the minor thing. So that, as far as like I said, I haven't seen any of these, but I gather from discussions that, you know, the terminology probably got a little worse when they were tagging them. I mean, and maybe some more personal insults. And you're right. I mean, this isn't, every fan base has this underbelly, if you will, but it tends to bubble up at times where the team isn't playing as well. But, you know, there is a legitimate discussion of and criticism, and then there is insulting and everything in that regard. And, you know, you really need to figure out how to draw the line. And it's worrisome, I think, at least in some parts. And again, there are shades of this, and I'm not trying to paint everybody with a broad brush, but as Tara said, it's a stream of consciousness thing. If this is your stream of consciousness, if this is where you automatically go when you want to tag some player and tell him he sucks and he's terrible and, you know, wish he would never hear and blah, 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 and this is your initial reaction to this stuff, take a look in the mirror, Fofo, because that is not healthy at all, at least in my opinion. I mean, it's, again, people talk big and all this kind of stuff, but just, you know, that shouldn't be your official reaction to, you know, human beings out there for your entertainment. And again, like I said, it's just, it's everywhere, and it's somewhat society now and the extremes that we see. But it's, you know, I hate it. Some people like to say that best fans in baseball, and I'm not talking about the Twitter account because that's disgusting and terrible as well. I'm talking about the general title that gets assigned to the Cardinals fan base. Some people think we assign it to ourselves. It doesn't really work that way. But as much as I don't necessarily know how much it holds, it is a point of pride. Or should be a point of pride. I think every fan base should try to be that. And when you see these kind of things, it's embarrassing, it's disappointing, and it kind of makes you, you know, and then, you know, somebody else, I think Alan pointed out to me on a Twitter, what does this do when the next time you want to try to sign a free agent? I'm not that St. Louis has already had some sort of reputation, but then I imagine Dexter Fowler is a well-liked individual, and if he's telling, you know, when he's discussing his time in St. Louis with people, and it's not going to inspire somebody else to come, you know, sign a big money contract to come here. Money will talk, but it's going to have to talk a lot louder to overcome some of the stuff that the fans are doing.
Yeah, and I was going to make the same point. You know, whether the moniker of best fans in baseball is something that you choose to proudly proclaim yourself, or it's just something that is said about this particular fan base. And to be fair, every player says that about their own fan base. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that's particularly unique to St. Louis, although that's sort of where it's been adopted. You know what? Act like it. If you want to be the best fans in baseball, then act like it. And it's not what we've seen on Twitter the last couple of weeks. And it's not, so with Dex and Aliyah Fowler, I don't want to go into this because I think that's a whole nother conversation that deserves a lot more attention than just the next couple of minutes. But there are some layers where, you know, there's some level of whether it's, how people talk about Dexter or how people talk about certain athletes in St. Louis, whether it's minority players or whether it's, you know, whatever it is, there are layers to that that I think are very real and that are very significant to the conversation, particularly from the front office in kind of how they establish themselves in that part of these continuing conversations in baseball. But I would also say it's not just Dexter Fowler. We've seen this with Matt Carpenter, in particular last year, where it got unbelievably bad as far as Matt Carpenter was concerned. You know, I was talking to somebody today, and Brett Cecil was the source of a lot of that last year when he was struggling. People, and we're not just talking, hey, you're a terrible baseball player. We're talking wishing ill on right. them physically and personally. And that is so far across the line that, look, this is a baseball podcast and we're going to talk about the actual baseball in a minute, but it felt like it was absolutely necessary to acknowledge that this is not okay just because it's Twitter and just because they're public figures. So if you want to be good fans and if you want to be the kind of fan base that deserves the kind of team that all of Cardinals fandom thinks that it does, then be those fans on Twitter and in person.
Yeah, it's pretty bad all the way around. And again, like we continue to say, I realize that one, not only is it not specific to Cardinal fans, but two, it's not the whole entire fan base. It's not a majority of Cardinal fans, I don't believe. And it's definitely, it's probably not even a very large minority, but it's a, you know, again, squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's the people that are making the most noise and they're doing the damage. And again, like you said, the Fowlers were great people on Twitter. I mean, for the most part, they were kind of what you wanted to see athletes. You wanted to see personalities. You want to see engaging. You want to see honesty. And it tends to be that when you see that, sometimes you get that. When you get it, sometimes you can't handle it. And people tend to then want you to go back to the, you know, stick to sports, go back to your cliches and things like that. And, you know, they didn't want to do that. And that's fine. You're right. You can have arguments and discussions about how or what they said, but you can't argue that, you know, they had the right to say them, and they I feel like came from a position of genuineness of what they were doing. So it's sad to see them, you know, kind of minimize their social media presence and for the reasons that we're seeing. So, yeah, that was not good. Is that it? Have we covered it well enough?
I think so.
Because otherwise,
if we want people to keep listening to the rest of the show, we should probably move on.
No, but now we have to talk about the people. We now have to talk about the players on the field. And
yeah, it doesn't get much better from here. So.
Before we get into what the Cardinals did or more likely didn't do this week, kind of came around, news came out today that the Cardinals are going to discontinue Greg Holland's rehab start and probably bring him back to the major leagues this week in Philadelphia. I don't know if it's an actual day has been set or what the case may be, but he's going on the road trip and will probably be activated. Of course, if he's activated, going on the road trip, it'll probably be activated maybe as early as tomorrow. Now, if you haven't been following Greg Holland in the minor leagues, you might be
thinking...
It's
probably better for your health.
Yeah, you might be thinking that maybe he had shown something in the minor leagues, and he has not. He had a 9 ERA in, I believe, 2 games at Memphis where he gave up... you know, I don't know if he gave up runs in both games or not, but there was one game where he blew the save by giving up a single, a double, and a homer. So that was great. And then he went to Springfield, and the first game there, he gave up a home run to some double A guy that hadn't hit very many of them. But he did throw a scoreless inning yesterday, maybe today. I'm not sure. Down in Springfield, which, hey, that's double A single scoreless inning is obviously big deal. I think the story by Jennifer Langlosh, and we should also indicate welcome back, Jennifer. Joe Trezza did a great job while she went out on maternity leave, but Jennifer has returned to the beat over the weekend. Jennifer writes this story, pretty much says it all. Holland did not identify a necessary mechanical adjustment while he was away, Matheny said, but did relay to the Cardinals that he believes that, quote, he's figuring it out, close quote. So right now we have on one hand some really, really bad rehab outings. We have the fact that he still has, I believe, you know, 5 to 10 days where he could still rehab in the minor leagues. And on the other hand, we have that he says he's figuring it out. And somehow that has tipped the scales to bringing Greg Holland to the big leagues. What is going on?
Okay, a lot to unpack here. So first of all, it sounds like at least initially he's rejoining the team, but maybe not being added back to the 25-man roster, for whatever that's worth. I'm not sure how he's going to continue, quote, figuring it out without pitching.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing for me. If you're going to bring him to on the road trip with the Cardinals and not actually add him to the roster, that's a pretty silly move, because one scoreless inning doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence, coupled with the fact that he himself has said he hasn't really identified anything that's changed. So that's the first thing for me. The second thing is, and we sort of talked about this a little bit before we started the show, this phrase, this cliche that keeps coming back to haunt us this season, and that is this idea of figuring it out or finding it. I'm not sure that they know what it is. And it's really hard to find something when you don't know what you're looking for. So whether he worked with some pitching coach in one of his minor league appearances and they identified something specific, it doesn't sound like that's the case, or he wouldn't have said they didn't identify anything specific. But this idea that he's finding it, I get what they're saying. I get what they're trying to suggest, and I understand that sometimes you just work your way into or out of a slump as an athlete. But if you don't know what you're looking for, if you don't know what it is that is going wrong, it's really hard to fix it because you're kind of flying blind and just, to keep throwing cliches out there, shooting in the dark, hoping that, you know, you find some magical secret sauce that makes everything okay again. That's not an effective process. And for someone like Greg Holland, who has been so good in the past and has been so bad lately, there should be a whole team of people working to figure out what it is that he should be looking for before they just assume that based on him feeling like he's almost sort of close to finding it is a good enough reason to bring him back to the team.
You know, and again, if the 30 days or whatever I think they get as rehab, if that was up or, you know, almost up and they have to bring him back to the big leagues, okay, that, you know, not really liking it much, but you don't have a whole lot of choice because, again, $14 million sunk cost, blah, blah, blah. You're probably not cutting him without him getting at least one more chance in the big leagues. But there's time left, and that's what's so weird. It's not that he went to Memphis and, you know, maybe a bad inning here has skewed things, or, you know, he's not walked a batter through his rehab time, which is not the case. You know, nothing on the field is indicating the results are going to be any better. Now, my only possible hope it could be that the Cardinals are bringing him up to give him his one last shot and see what they have, because they're about ready to start making moves. They're, you know, they've seen this team scuffle. They know this team needs something, and maybe they're not going to wait until the last week in July before they start shaking things up. Maybe they're going to bring Holland up and give him a couple of chances and then, you know, cut him as they start to go through the 40-man roster and knowing what they have. You know, that's my sliver of hope, because otherwise, this decision-making process just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, I think a lot of times in the past, we may not have agreed with what the Cardinals were doing, but we could understand what the Cardinals were doing. Given the fact that, you know, Greg Holland was bad on his first time down in the minors, came up and was bad, and then we've seen some of these guys that have made rehab starts and then come back and struggled or gotten hurt again. It just doesn't seem to make sense to bring him up when he hasn't, you know, if he put two or three good outings together at the end of this thing, maybe he's at least got some momentum for a call-up. But right now, he's got one good inning under his belt, and I just don't think that's enough.
And I think that sort of what you just said there highlights another problem that seems to be a sort of team-wide philosophical problem. And I kind of mentioned it on Twitter earlier, but this idea of hope being the driving force in their business decisions, or in their strategy decisions, right? It feels like this is a team, and, you know, always with a grain of salt, because I'm not actually in the clubhouse. I'm not hearing these conversations. I'm not seeing what goes on there. But there was a pretty clear picture painted by, I believe it was Hockman's article yesterday about the clubhouse after the game. Jeff Jones alluded to it a little earlier today as well. This idea that it was a very strange clubhouse dynamic, as far as certain guys who stuck around and were talking baseball strategy, you know, whatever. So I feel like we do kind of have a sense of how this team is operating from the inside out. And even based in the comments after games, there's this idea that the overarching philosophy is we're going to go out and try really hard and hope we win. I don't think that's a great mentality for competitive athletes, right? Because you see other teams who, it might seem like semantics, but rather than saying we're going to go out and try really hard and hope that we win, you see other teams, other comments, even other Cardinals teams in the past, where there was this determination and this drive and this kind of never say die attitude where they weren't going to let the game dictate to them if they were going to win. They were going to dictate what the result would be themselves. Now, I realize there's a lot of luck and there's a lot of other factors involved in the actual results of the game, but it seems like that is what is being reflected in this idea of, you know, some players looking disinterested or a lack of urgency or whatever the case may be, is that their whole philosophy seems to center around this idea of we hope it's going to work. And that's not really, I mean, to me, that's a very clear reflection of leadership and a mentality and a philosophy that is never going to be successful in this game.
Obviously, we should just continue to rant because Cardinal keeps scoring while we're doing this.
This show will never end.
Yeah, we're gonna pick this up.
You're
again,
welcome.
Tomorrow night at 6:05, whatever it may be. Cardinals are now at 5-0, and still not into where you would bring Greg Holland into a game, but a little bit better off. Yeah, I think there is some of that. It does feel like that. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of a basis on some of this stuff. It's like, yeah, they've done it before, so they can do it again, or, you know, this is all we've got, let's do this. I don't, you know, I mean, that's the argument for a change in voice in the clubhouse, whether it is Mike Matheny, whether it's John Mabry, because it's pretty much everybody else has been changed. You know, it makes you, you know, there's an argument for that there. There's an argument for bringing a bit of a more of an edge to the managerial spot. And again, you know, it is very funny to see how Tony La Russa is almost deified now, when I can remember when people were adamantly wanting him fired because he was never going to win the big one. He was, you know, he would get them to the playoffs, but they would never actually do anything in them or whatever. There's even a group of fans that flew airplane with a banner over spring training saying fire La Russa or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this people, and then, you know, then he wins the World Series and everything is great. And but even so, there were years where they were not good. So I'm not saying that in the regard that we're going to think that, you know, after we get the next guy, we're going to look fondly back on Matheny's tenure. But, you know, who knows? Maybe we will. I don't think so. But I probably had a point too. Not really sure what it was though.
Well, I would add to that and say that I don't believe for a second that it's a lack of effort, right, or an apathy about their jobs. I want to be very clear about that, because that's been a huge part of this uncomfortable social media conversation, whether it's Dexter Fowler or Colton Wong or Carlos Martinez, who suddenly is back to looking disinterested on the field. The reality is they all kind of look like they're operating in a bit of a fog. There just isn't that, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And I don't even know that it's because John Mabry or Mike Matheny or whomever else you want to throw into that equation, although there are very many left from the start of when this all seemed to be an issue. I don't know that it's that they're specifically bad at their jobs, although that case can certainly be made as far as baseball strategy is concerned. But it's more for me the fact that it's not accomplishing the collective goal, right? They all want to go out and win every night that they're out on the field. But this approach, this attitude, this underlying, I don't know, lackadaisical, you know, golly gee, aw shucks, good guy thing doesn't really inspire the kind of competitiveness that we're used to seeing out of the best Cardinals teams. And that's the only thing in my mind that can make a change to that, because it's a team-wide thing. It's not just a couple of guys who don't seem like they care. It's all of these guys who seem like they do care, but they don't know how to change the course that they're on. To me, the only way to really change that has to be with leadership. And I'm not even saying that from the perspective of I think Mike Matheny's a bad strategic manager. It's just that to me is the only place you can make a change without completely blowing up the roster and starting over.
Yeah, and again, and we said this, and I will say, we said this, or at least I did, at the end of Tony La Russa's tenure, even in 2010, 2011, we kind of said, is it getting stale? Is it getting where you just need something new in there? You need that new voice. You need that shakeup. And we saw this last year. You know, this.
And then they traded Colby Rasmus. So
right, and then it all worked out. So. Which was still, in baseball terms, a terrible trade. It just tended to work out at the end of it, and to some degree, that helped build Mo's reputation, which is taking a bit of a hit as of late as well. But that's another topic. But you know, there is this idea that another voice could be helpful, and maybe you know, it baseball goes in cycles as well, and sometimes it is you need the hard edge guy to be in there, and then at some point in time that gets too bad, the players stop responding to that, so you go get a players manager, if you will, like Matheny, and it maybe works for a while, but then it gets soft, and then you go back to the hard edge guy and get them to, you know, shock the system a little bit. But this time last year, you know, we're just right at or a little after that, you know, that time where they shifted the coaches and, you know, they got rid of Johnny Peralta. They realized that something needed to be done. Some kind of shakeup needed to happen. We're in a better situation this year with the Cardinals. The Cardinals are above 500. They're still somewhat in the race, although it'd be interesting. They may not be that much better off than they were last year because everybody else was bad last year too. But there doesn't seem to be that need right now for that shakeup. At least I'm saying we see the need. Front office does not seem to see the need to do that. And again, sometimes, I'm not, like you said, it's not that we necessarily want Mike Matheny or Tom Mabry to lose their job. It's not even that they're necessarily bad at their jobs. But at some point in time, in baseball, the baseball culture, as the saying goes, you can't fire 25 players, so you fire the manager, you fire the hitting coach, you do something to make an impact. And the Cardinals haven't wanted to go that way yet. Maybe that'll change. Who knows? But it is... It feels like something's got to happen now. It's very good to see them come out tonight after getting beat by the Cubs twice, once in very resounding fashion, after losing 2 of 3 to the Padres, after losing 2 or 3 a week ago to the Marlins. It could have been very easy for this team to come out and just been completely flat and just watch the Cubs walk over them tonight. And honestly, as well as Jack Flaherty did, I kind of expected that to happen once he left the game, and it hasn't, thankfully. So you got to give him credit for that. But, you know, is this going to spark a 7-game winning streak? It didn't really feel like it, but, you know, I guess stranger things have happened. But if it doesn't, you know, does this really tell us anything?
It's so hard to figure out what it tells us, except that this team is still, it's still not what it looks like it should be on paper. And it's hard to sort of come up with answers for that. Now, the bullpen, I think, on paper, looks like it's a little in flux right now. But the offense continues to be a problem. Yes, they've scored 5 runs tonight, but it's been a struggle up and down the lineup for almost everyone except Marcelo Ozuna. Of course, Jose Martinez not with the team this weekend. Our congrats to him on the birth of his daughter. What a way to spend Father's Day. Mm-hmm. But the offense continues to be a problem, and that's why John Mabry keeps coming back into the conversation. And I think until they can get a handle on how to create some kind of consistent offense, this is the team we're going to see. We're going to see a team that gets great starting pitching, that puts a ton of pressure on their bullpen because the offense isn't scoring runs, and they lose a lot of games because of it. I don't know, again, because it seems to be team-wide as far as some of the consistent struggles and challenges and mistakes made offensively, you start trying to figure out where the source of that is, and whether it's deserved or not, John Mabry is the guy that wears that hat, and that's why you start pointing fingers. And again, I would say I don't know, having not been in the batting cages with John Mabry or in the video room with John Mabry and Colton Wong, what their process is, but to me, it seems like there's almost too much happening. I don't know exactly how to say this, because I think that that whole, like, sit back and hope something works mentality is still a part of the offensive problems. But also I think that there might be a little bit of too much information being shared, not necessarily like, hey, here are 9,000 numbers that should tell you all that you need to know, although who knows, for all I know, maybe that's what they're doing and it's clearly not working, but just that it looks like with, I mentioned Colton Wong, it looks like he's trying too many different things, and they'll try this and it doesn't work, and try this and it doesn't work, and try this and it doesn't work, and he's even talked about how much of a grind it has been for him to try all these different things. But like I said about Greg Holland, if you don't know what you're looking for to change, it's hard to find what the right thing is to change. And that's where, you know, the Cardinals have kind of paid lip service to this idea of becoming a team that that values advanced metrics. I'm not convinced that the Cardinals have the people in place to translate those numbers to the players in a realistic way, to say, okay, here's what these 17 algebra equations are telling us. Here's what it means for your swing. Here's where your hands need to be. Here's what you need to do with your toe tap if you're Marcelo Ozuna. Thanks, Zach Gifford. Or, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't seem like they have the person in place to translate that information. So it may not be that John Mabry is bad at absorbing that information. It just seems like he's bad at translating it to the players that he's working with in a way that doesn't just give them so much going on in their heads that they take all of that with them to the plate, instead of doing all that in the batting cages and then when you get to the plate, turning your brain off and letting your body do what it's been trained to do.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, you know, what Dizzy Dean said back in the 34 series, if they're already thinking they're beat. Yeah. To some of that, you know, you want to be able to react. So much of that is just needing to react. But you have to have that information, you have to be looking for these things. And you're right, I think that they get too much, and they're not necessarily translating it well, and maybe that takes a new school approach too. I mean, you're getting a lot of new information in this stuff, and I'm sure everybody's kind of trying to figure out how's the best way to, you know, take launch angle, take where things are landing and how things are hitting, and translate that into shift your arms down half an inch and this is going to have, you know, it's that kind of stuff. I'm sure it's going to take some work, but you know, maybe it takes somebody new to do that. I don't know. We will see, and hopefully they can figure some stuff out.
And I was having this conversation with my dad, actually, and he was talking about how, well, Jim Edmonds didn't need any of those advanced metrics. He just went up there and reacted to the pitch. And that's true. And I think there's certainly something. There were a ton of really great hitters in this game before sabermetrics, now I can't even say it. I'm trying to say it like my dad does. Before it became a popular source of information, right? There are a lot of great hitters in this game that never thought about launch angle in those terms or never thought about exit velocity as labeled as such. But there also weren't pitchers who had information as far as heat maps and tendencies and holes in their swings. So everyone has more information now, and they're using it to their advantage. If you're not using it to your advantage, you're falling behind in a way that is more obvious than it used to be, because pitchers pitch guys differently now. Pitchers have more information. They have better scouting reports. They have better game plans. So as a hitter, you have to then react similarly and do as much preparation and be as informed as some of those pitchers and catchers are in their game plan, just because that's the baseball world that we're living in right now. It's not that these guys can't be good hitters by doing what Jim Edmonds did, or what, you know, pick a great hitter from the past. They were all good in their time because they adapted to the game that they played in. The Cardinals and everyone else around them are playing in a game that's different than it was then. Yeah. And it starts so much now, even at the minor league levels. I work with a Houston Astros affiliate, and they're right on the forefront of all of this, and they're incorporating it at the A-ball level with these guys, as far as ways that they track their hitting, ways that they track their pitching, and then teaching them how to apply that information in a meaningful way. It's not analytics in and of themselves are not good or bad. It's what you do with them that will make a difference in a game that is so driven by information in 2018.
All right, we have gone long, unsurprisingly, but let us talk about one last thing. Maybe there'll be a little bit, maybe there's a hope for optimism. I don't know, but we'll talk about it and see. Cardinals did win this game 5-0, and we saw, I feel like, maybe the signs of a decent bullpen. We saw Austin Gomber come in and actually pitch, I think, 2 innings. Instead of being just a lefty specialist, which is what Mike Matheny was trying to use him as, it felt like. He only pitched 1 inning, I'm sorry. But still, he pitched a whole inning instead of doing that. We've seen John Brebbia pitch well. He pitched another one. And then you have Hicks and Norris. It may be that those are the only four guys that you can rely on, but it feels to me, at least I feel like right now, you kind of can rely on those four guys, which is double what you could have done about 2 weeks ago when you could only rely on Jordan Hicks and Bud Norris. And is that fair? Do you trust Austin Gomber and John Brebbia right now?
Yeah, I think the Austin Gomber sample size is still pretty small. Mm-hmm. But what we have seen both in Memphis and in most of his appearances, he's had a few little speed bumps. But who in that bullpen hasn't
right.
this year?
Right.
So yeah, I think that what we've seen from Brebbia makes him a good, reliable option. I think that obviously Jordan Hicks and Bud Norris have been the two that seemed to be the only ones you could trust out of that bullpen. So if Austin Gomber puts himself into that mix, especially with guys like Tyler Lyons and Ryan Sheriff out for however long, obviously Sheriff for the season, that's an important role that this team was missing, and I would love to see him kind of step up and claim that. And then that gives you enough options that you don't feel like if your starter doesn't go 7, you just can't possibly get out of the game without giving up the winning runs. Mm-hmm. Do I think that's enough? No. Do I think it's a good start? Absolutely. And that is a piece of this puzzle for the Cardinals that has been just in this constant state of turnover. And I don't, you know, we talked about it the very first weekend of the season, because with the Greg Holland signing happening on the opening day, mm-hmm. with the decision to put Jordan Hicks in the major league bullpen, I mean, there was just so many, there were so many pieces of this bullpen puzzle that were just very confusing as far as what the actual plan was. And then we've seen things like, I mean, even Austin Gomber experienced this, and then Ponce de Leon came up and sat in the bullpen for three games and then went back to Memphis. I mean, there's just some very odd decision making as far as this bullpen is concerned, but I think the driving factor in that is that they don't have any consistency out of the bullpen other than Bud Norris, who was a bit of a surprise, and Jordan Hicks, who was certainly a wild card, and they weren't quite sure what they were going to get out of him. So some stability in the bullpen, I think, would go a long way, and if someone like Brevia can be the source of that with Austin Gomber coming alongside and claiming a role in that bullpen, I think it would do wonders for what this team can look at as far as the ways to improve. Because when you basically need like four bullpen arms and some offense somewhere, you know, you're a little bit trapped as far as what moves you can make or what decisions can be made to solve some of those problems. Solidifying a couple of those roles outside of Hicks and Norris would definitely be a good start.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, again, it requires you to trust Mike Matheny and his bullpen usage, which is always a dangerous thing. But if you feel confident, again, I'm not saying we're going to put John Brevia in the ninth inning. We're not going to put Austin Gomber in the ninth inning. But if you feel confident that you can bring Brevia and Gomber into those sixth, seventh, and not lose the game, and if you've got Hicks and Norris at the back end of bullpens that you hopefully don't have to pitch them 3 days or 4 days in a row, but you know, if you can find the right times to put in Tui Lavalla and to put in Brett Cecil and others that you're not as comfortable with, that you're not as confident about, whether it's a big score or you're down late or whatever it may be, just to try to get them not only to pitch well, but to also give rest to the guys you trust. I mean, you can manage that. It's just very, you know, it's very difficult with two. It's a little bit more reasonable with four arms. And you know, then again, then you're going to have Greg Holland in that mix, and so we've already touched. Never
mind. So much for ending on a lighter.
Yeah, that was working. But you know, again, I hope, and again, bull relievers are crazy, and they're short samples, small samples, and they go up and they go down, and you know, today's hero, this week's, you're like, great, Brevia is awesome, and then by this time next week, we're like, why is Brevia still on this team? Why isn't he back in AAA? You know, I mean, it's just the way relievers go, it feels like. But right now, after this, after not only tonight, but what we've seen out of those guys recently, you got to feel like there's at least some hope for that bullpen. But it's still going to need some work, because you're right. Four is not enough, but it's a start. So on that note, and before we get started on some other long rant, which we can probably find one, I have no doubt. But until then, that is Tara. I'm Daniel. We'll talk at you next week.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.